It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. If you've been following the news, you know that the situation in Syria continues to evolve. Amid reports, Syrian President Bashar al-Assad may be willing to give up his chemical weapons. France is putting a resolution before the UN Security Council today that calls on Syria to hand them over to international monitors and accept that they will be dismantled. Is this enough to avoid a punitive strike by the United States? We'll hear from President Obama tonight as he addresses the nation with live coverage on 90.5 WESA beginning at 9 o'clock tonight. One Pittsburgher who will be listening intently is Dr. Basil Terminini, a Syrian-American who's lived in Pittsburgh for 16 years. As president of the Pittsburgh chapter of the Syrian-American Medical Society, he's made numerous humanitarian visits to his home country since the Syrian revolt began. He joins us now in Studio A to talk about the changes he's seen in the last few months, his views on the continued violence, and what he hopes to hear from President Obama this evening. If you have a comment or question for our guest, you can join the conversation by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Our email address is essspgh@wesa.fm, and you can reach us on Twitter and follow the conversation at #EPLive. Again, you can reach us on Twitter at ESSPGH and follow the conversation at #EPLive. Again, the phone number, 412-246-2002. Dr. Basil Terminini, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you, Paul, and I appreciate the opportunity.
Tell us your story of how you came to live in Pittsburgh.
Well, I was born and I grew up in Aleppo, Syria, which is the second city in Syria. I graduated from medical school in 1983. Then did my obligatory national service in the Army for 2 years. Came to the United States in 1986 to do my postgraduate training in Washington, D.C., Georgetown University, and the NIH. And then moved to Pittsburgh area in 1997 for a job opportunity. I started a practice in Steubenville, Ohio, as a gastroenterologist, and I still practice in that area, but I live in Moon Township area.
Why did you choose not to go back to Syria after you finished school?
It's mostly the political system, lack of basic human rights, freedom of speech, and corruption, major corruption, and all the dictatorship aspects of life.
And you mentioned that you spent, when you were living in Syria, you were in Aleppo, which is we hear a lot about that city because that is where much of the action is taking place.
Correct. It's the second city in Syria in the north. It's a very old city, more than 3,000 years old. Has an ancient old city, which is a UNESCO inheritance site. Has been split between the opposition and the government for the last few months, 50-50. People live under horrible conditions. And it seems to be a status quo for now. No side is able to gain control.
So in your recent visits to Syria, what have you seen?
Well, the last visit was only a few weeks ago. I came back on the 22nd of August. I visited liberated areas of Syria, northern Syria, came from Turkey, through Turkey, visited several hospitals, field hospitals, clinics, rehab centers, and some distribution centers we have at the SAMS, Syrian American Medical Society. One of the hospitals specifically was mostly furnished by myself through my hospital, Trinity Medical Center in Steubenville. We furnished two full operating rooms on more than 40 beds. So I was very proud to see that place saving lives. We also did some charity work trying to establish some school systems and other facilities in that area.
You were just leaving Syria at the time of the chemical attack on August 21st, which has created the whole crisis that we find ourselves – that the world finds itself in now. What were people saying about that day, about what happened?
People were horrified, but they were not surprised. There were several smaller-scale chemical attacks on several areas in Syria. Around 15 to 20 people were killed on each attack. So because of the no response of the international community, this move, this attack was not surprising to many people I met. Actually, SAMS have been preparing for that, and we sent a decontamination tent to that area in Damascus suburb just 2 days prior to the attack.
And a decontamination tent.
Correct. Decontamination tent for chemical weapons. It took us a month trying to smuggle that through there because that area was under siege. But luckily, we got there in time. Otherwise, the casualty would have been two or three times as high.
Worse than the 1,400 deaths that happened.
Correct, because the total people involved were around 8,000.
And explain how that works, how one of these tents works.
Well, basically, all people exposed to chemical weapons should go into that tent initially to get sprayed by water and get rid of all their clothes. Healthcare personnel in that tent should have a very protective gear. It's called C+, which is the highest protection gear, so they'll be protected. And then from there, they go inside the hospital to be treated specifically for those chemical agents, which is mostly atropine, which we use here, ubiquitously. But in that specific treatment, it's usually 80 times the usual dose we use. So we use like around 60 to 80 milligrams of atropine compared to 1 milligram of average dose of atropine in regular situations.
President Assad says he doesn't have these weapons. And I'm sure you hear him on the news, the clips on the news or the quotes that show up in news accounts in which he denies using the weapons or even having the weapons. When you hear that, what is your reaction?
Well, nobody believes Assad and his propaganda. His news are mostly coming from the security services, detention centers. This is extension of their of those intelligence agencies. Then after denying having any chemical weapons, yesterday he agreed to give them to the United Nations. He also denied killing more than 100,000 people and denied torturing to death Hamza al-Khatib, a 12-year-old boy who was arrested trying to deliver food to besieged Dara in March of 2011. That boy was tortured to death after being detained in the intelligence services for a month. His mutilated body was delivered to his parents, and he promised Bashar Assad himself. Promised investigation into that incident. We have not seen any results of that. So they lie and they keep lying. I wouldn't ask Hitler about his crimes, whether he admits those or not. It's the same situation. Propaganda is all what they do.
I want to go back to a panel discussion that took place earlier this summer about Syria that you took part in. And one of the panelists, Leila al-Sulayman, argued that by framing the conflict as a civil war, we ignore power imbalances and create the implication that both sides are equally responsible for starting the conflict and for any resulting tragedy. What do you think about her comments?
I totally agree with that. I think we don't call it civil war in Syria. We call it a revolution. This is how it started, and this is how it is right now. It's basically a dictator who has staged a war against his own people of all sects and religions who dare to ask for democracy and freedom. Bashar Assad opted for a heavy hand approach from the first day of the revolution, and he continued to do that, killing more than 100,000 people and destroying the country in the interim.
There has been debate for some time over whether the United States should intervene, either through a no-fly zone or with weapons or troops. And since the revelations of the chemical weapons attack on August 21st, there's been a discussion about, obviously, the debate about whether the U.S. should launch a punitive strike with missiles. The carriers are in place to do that if the president gives the command. Have you been hoping that the U.S. would intervene in some way?
We were holding very high hopes up until yesterday, and then the tone changed all of a sudden. We believed a strike, just a single Tomahawk missile, would shorten the lifespan of the dictator by 1 week. There are things that the rebels are unable to do on the ground. They cannot deal with airstrikes. They cannot deal with Scud missiles. And they cannot deal with the intense shelling. That's what most of the casualties are caused by. And, of course, they cannot deal with chemical weapons. So we were hoping an attack by the U.S. or the international community is going to stop this nonsense killing that's been happening for 2.5 years in Syria.
Are you able to understand or identify with the attitude that Americans have, that you've heard the term, I'm sure, that the United States, that the American public is war weary, and that the members of Congress are reluctant to engage even in a punitive strike for the simple reason that the result could be unpredictable and draw us into yet another war? What do you think about the reservations that people – do you understand and identify with the reservations that people in the United States have?
Certainly. I sympathize with that position. I think it's the bad experience of Iraq and Afghanistan has lots to do with that. But this is completely – this is a different situation where we're not staging a war. We're trying to end a war. We're trying to prevent killing of innocent civilians. And the consequences, I think, are going to be minimal. Bashar Assad had just surrendered his chemical weapons with only the threat of an attack. We all believe in Syria that most people around him will defect immediately after the first strike. Nobody is asking for boots on the ground. That is a no-no from the United States and the Syrian civilians. We believe the collateral damage is going to be minimal. Even though we heard some reports that Assad has been using the detainees, the political prisoners, as human shields in his military positions.
Some have questioned there's been a lot of talk about arming the rebels, and some have questioned the wisdom of doing that. What do you think of that idea?
I think I take Senator John McCain's position in that he knows the rebels much better than anybody else in the U.S. He's been to that area, met several of them. I think there are majority of the rebels, especially the Free Syrian Army, is very moderate. They do have a nice organization with 15 different military consuls in each province, and they are well organized. The only problem with the Free Syrian Army is the lack of funds and lack of weapons, especially tanks and anti-aircrafts.
There is a concern. The reluctance about arming the rebels is that the weapons could fall into the wrong hands, and that you have some rebels who, it is said, much like Libya, have ties to al-Qaeda or to terrorist organizations. What do you think the chances are that if we did arm the rebels that the weapons could fall into the wrong hands?
I think if done properly, that chance is minimal. The al-Qaeda offshoots in Syria, Jabhat al-Nusra and the Islamic Nation of Iraq and Sham, are very unpopular. But they gained grounds because they were getting supply resources from Saudi Arabia, from of the wealthy donors who have similar backwards views about Islam. This is all foreign to the Syrian people. Syria has been an open country. People lived in harmony for centuries. We have all kinds of religions and sects. We never had any ethical or sectarian violence in Syria. So I think once we support the Free Syrian Army and the political structure, which is the Syrian coalition, that's going to improve our chances of getting rid of those extreme elements in Syria.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. My guest is Dr. Basil Terminini, a Syrian-American who has lived in Pittsburgh for 16 years and is president of the Pittsburgh chapter of the Syrian-American Medical Society. We'll continue our conversation on Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. We are discussing the Syrian crisis from the perspective of a Pittsburgh resident. My guest is Dr. Basil Terminini, a Syrian-American who has lived in Pittsburgh for 16 years and is president of the Pittsburgh chapter of the Syrian-American Medical Society. If you have a comment or question for our guest, you can join the conversation by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. 2002. Our email address, esspgh@wesa.fm, and you can reach us on Twitter and follow the conversation at #EPLive. If Syrian President Assad hands over control of his chemical weapons to the international community, as he is now reportedly promising to do, President Obama and Secretary of State John Kerry have said they will hold back on a military strike. In an ABC News interview yesterday, President Obama had this to say.
I don't think that we would have gotten to this point unless we had maintained a credible possibility of a military strike, and I don't think now's the time for us to let up on that. But my objective here has always been to deal with a very specific problem. So what I've said specifically is I want to make sure that that norm against use of chemical weapons is maintained. That's in our national security interest. If we can do that without a military strike, that is overwhelmingly my preference. And now the key is, can we see with a sense of urgency language and a plan that is enforceable and verifiable through the international community that accomplishes that?
The comments of President Obama yesterday. So now I will pose to my guest, Dr. Basil Terminini. What is your reaction to what the president had to say?
I agree with the president that this is an urgent matter to prevent future chemical attacks. But there's a very important point here, which is we need to bring those people responsible for this crime to justice at all levels. Justice should be served. You don't ask the killer to surrender the gun and they get away with the crime. The other issue I have is people are being killed not just by chemical weapons. The majority of civilians are killed by airstrikes, by TNT barrels dropped from helicopters, and by Scud missiles. So we need to make sure all those other acts of crimes to be stopped after this, after the threat of the attack.
Well, the president is saying the main thing here is to make sure that the chemical weapons aren't used anymore. So he's saying that as long as that stops, we don't need to get involved militarily. We don't need to fire strikes against Syria. Are you saying that simply ending the use of the chemical weapons is not enough?
It's not enough. Chemical weapon problem, just in a recent one, but all those innocent people have been killed prior to that, and they will continue to die afterwards. We need a comprehensive plan, not a knee-jerk response, a comprehensive plan to deal with the Syrian crisis, which is a Syrian uprising revolution. People are asking for freedom, democracy, and dignity. That's very simple, human rights. Nobody's addressing those issues.
Do you trust the Syrian government to hand over all of its chemical weapons? We are seeing reports this morning that President Assad is saying, I will hand them over. Do you trust him to not hold anything back from what he says he's going to do?
I don't trust them at all. I don't trust anybody in that mafia organization. He is a scam artist, him and his intelligence services.
412-246-2002, if you'd like to join the conversation with our guest, Dr. Basil Terminini, a Syrian-American living in Pittsburgh. He's been living here for 16 years and is president of the Pittsburgh chapter of the Syrian-American Medical Society, a native of Aleppo in Syria. Let's go to the phones. We have Julie in Hopewell. Julie, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you so much. I just wanted to thank your guest for being on your show, for stating his views so clearly, and also for the good he's been able to accomplish in Syria. One of the sound bites on NPR today about this issue, someone says, well, they've been fighting in Syria since biblical times, kind of as an excuse for us to not get involved. And your guest did briefly mention some of the history of Syria, but I was hoping he could perhaps address that history issue a little further.
Thank you for that question. Very important question. I think there are misinformation about what's been happening in Syria. Syria forever, for centuries, have been very peaceful. I'll give you an example. My hometown of Aleppo, when the Armenians ran away from prosecution by the Turks, they settled in Aleppo. More than 250,000 people settled there for many, many years. We have a mixing pot there. There are all kinds of religions and ethnicities, and we live side by side, never had any single incident before Assad and after Assad. Assad now is using the Alawite sect as a human shield. He gave them so much privileges that they're all afraid now they're going to lose all those privileges. For 8% of the population, they had 90% of the officers in the army. And army positions translate into money and power in a mafia system like this. But in general, we've had all kinds of sects. We have Muslims, Christians, Jews for many, many years. We miss them badly in Aleppo. We still hold their houses and synagogues open for them to come back. We have Kurds. We have Armenians, Assyrians, all sects and religions, and never heard any single incident.
Julie, thank you for your comments and your question for our guest. What are you hoping, Dr. Terminini, to hear from the president tonight?
I would like to hear a comprehensive plan how to deal with this issue. I'd like to hear him talk about all atrocities committed by the Assad regime, not just people killed by chemical weapons. I'd like to hear him talking about how to prevent further casualties by innocent civilians and how to support the Free Syrian Army so they can finish the job, and how to support the political organization we have called the Syrian Coalition. Because when I went to Syria, people in liberated areas were living freely. They're happy, but they have nothing. There are no utilities, no electricity, no water, no schools for more than a year. There are organizations on the ground. There are local councils who are very advanced. All volunteers are very well educated, but they lack funds. There's no money to do any projects. We donated some projects, but we are very limited individuals. We cannot really deal with large-scale projects like that.
Would funding from the United States be sufficient enough in lieu of intervention?
No, I think it has to be a comprehensive approach. The approach that the administration have done so far for the last year or so is basically to do humanitarian aid, which is basically a band-aid approach to stop a gushing wound, hoping that the bleeding would stop eventually. That has not worked, and it's not going to work. We're going to have to stop the killing.
So you're saying that even if the president says we're going to wait and hope that President Assad keeps his promise to turn over all the chemical weapons, and that if in the next few weeks or so he does that to the satisfaction of the international community, that's not enough, in your opinion, that there has to be U.S. intervention?
It has to be some kind of intervention, U.S. or international community, based on the UN, that somebody has to protect the civilians in a war zone. That has not happened because of Russia and Chinese vetoes repeatedly. So we have to act outside the United Nations. We do have a group of friends of Syria. We can do a no-fly zone, because I think TNT barrels have been very destructive for those liberated areas in Syria. And so we're looking for a comprehensive plan, not just – and also arming the rebels can help a lot.
My guest has been a Pittsburgh resident who is a native of Syria but who has lived in Pittsburgh for the last 16 years, Dr. Basil Terminini, a Syrian-American and president of the Pittsburgh chapter of the Syrian-American Medical Society, joining me here in Studio A. Dr. Terminini, thank you so much for being with us on Essential Pittsburgh.
I'd just like to add, if people are interested in donating or look at SAMS work in Syria, medical relief efforts, the website is sams-usa.net. Thank you very much, Paul. I appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you.